I'm our Joe on Market Street. This is FieldPod.com, the week in Georgia, in English, coming to you from our little glass box in the San Francisco Public Library. Today is Thursday, the 5th of December, 2013. On this date, in 1408, the Golden Horde reaches and, of course, sacks Moscow. 1766, in London, James Christie holds his first sale. 1933, Prohibition in the United States ends. 1957, Sukarno expels all Dutch people from Indonesia. 1978, the USSR and Afghanistan sign a, and I'm saying this with air quotes, friendship treaty. Birthdays today are George Armstrong Custer, Fritz Lang, Walt Disney, Strom Thurmond, Little Richard, Joan Didion, Calvin Trillin, and the late, great J.J. Cale. Today, again, it's just me, Mark Mullen. Thanks again for those posting to our forum. We have a question about where to get In Bloom in the movie. I'm sorry to say I have no idea. If anyone does know where to get that, let us know. We also have a long rant under a pseudonym about how horrible Shevardnadze was and is, and what an idiot I am for not expressing that with more verve. It's worth a read. I don't completely agree with it, but, you know, there you go. He accuses me of saying that history started in 1997 when I showed up in Georgia, and all I can say is that most people were relatively relieved that Shevardnadze was there at that point. I would say of the people that I talked to, maybe two-thirds, and gradually that changed till it was about 0% in 2002. If you'd like to comment on the blog, ask a question, whatever else, tell me I'm an idiot, then go to tepeelpod.com and send us an email, or send us an email at tepeelpod@gmail.com. Just so you know, we've been putting up TepeelPod posters in hostels, so for any of you recent hostel stayers, send us an email at tepeelpod@gmail.com to win fabulous prizes. All you need to do is tell us the name of the hostel you stayed in and something interesting that travelers should know or things about Tbilisi that you're glad you figured out by the time you left but wish you'd known when you arrived. To subscribe to the podcast, go to tepeelpod.com, scroll down the screen, and on the right-hand side below the columns of tags, there's a little rectangular icon that says iTunes. Click it, and you'll get all the new iPod episodes. If you still have trouble, let us know by posting a comment on our website or emailing us. We want to be sure that you're well set up on iTunes and want to know about any other iTunes problems. So, following up on last week's story about the association agreement between Georgia and the EU, on the 28th and 29th of November, Georgian and EU officials signed the association agreement, so long that it took 2 days, evidently, which includes a deep and comprehensive free trade area, a crisis management operations agreement, and other stipulations. On the 3rd of December, the EU published the 1,000 pages of text on their website. In Ukraine, which didn't sign the agreement, as you may have heard, there have been very serious anti-government protests, likely to heat up this Saturday. Major Georgian media outlets followed the events closely. The hardest-working NGO in the Caucasus, Transparency International Georgia's media monitors, described the Georgian TV coverage as being slightly pro-protester. However, no channel openly supports them. I'm quoting here from an email they sent us exclusively. Journalists were a bit agitated when speaking about the topic, and the coverage was a bit emotional. Most of the positive pro-protester sentiment came from respondents asking questions rather than from the journalists themselves. Among the major TV stations, the public broadcaster and Imedi TV addressed the topic in a drier manner, which is in line with their general style of reporting. If it seems that Rustavi 2 is more supportive, this is more a reflection of how they generally cover news. On the 27th of November, MPs from the UNM, I'm no longer quoting from the TI email to us, MPs from UNM wore Ukrainian flag-colored scarves and placed miniature Ukrainian, Georgian, and EU flags at their seats. Earlier this week, UNM lawmakers proposed that the parliament adopt an anti-Russian statement regarding Ukraine. They wanted it to say, quote, "Express concern over political, economic pressure and blackmail exerted by the Russian Federation against the Ukrainian authorities in recent months with the purpose to make Ukraine reject signing the association agreement with the European Union," end quote. However, Georgian Dream voted down the UNM proposed text, arguing that it interfered with another country's internal affairs, which is kind of idiotic. On the 2nd of December, hundreds of students, politicians, NGO representatives, and Ukrainian citizens gathered in front of the old parliament building in Tbilisi to express solidarity. People waved Ukrainian and EU flags and sang the Ukrainian national anthem. Former Education Minister Giannodia and other UNM supporters attended the rally, as did members of the New Rights Party and writer Dato Turashvili. On the 3rd of December, Ukrainian opposition MP Ruslan Koshilinsky, Deputy Speaker of the Parliament, cut his visit to Georgia short due to the protests. He said he thinks the Ukrainian ambassador to Georgia may be recalled soon. On the 3rd of December, UNM members, including members of Parliament Gia Baramidze, Dato Sakhvaralidze, and Sergo Ratiani, arrived in Kiev to show their support. Now, here's my own view, since I was asked. I think the EU and its neighbors are going through a process of becoming more clear about Russia. In general, Russia has been okay with simply meddling and being difficult. The closer and smaller the country, the meaner they have been. But with Vilnius, or the meeting in Vilnius, it's now clear that they see friendship completely as a zero-sum game, including with the EU. If a neighbor of Russia becomes more friendly with anybody, even anybody as mild and amorphous as the EU, then Russia will take that as an insult and rejection deserving of punishment. In the quiet way of a management-level racketeer, the explanation of the payment required and the retaliation if rejected will be quiet and behind closed doors. The most important question is how will the various populations take this? Burjanadze, the pro-Russian candidate, was soundly rejected, so the Georgian government is trying to figure out how they can wholeheartedly pursue a relationship with the EU, but also keep things relatively calm with Russia. It's not clear whether Russia will allow this. As I said in Will Cathcart's article in BuzzFeed, relatively, because Russia is constantly unrolling bales of concertina in Georgia, even beyond the areas that they already occupy. The Kremlin doesn't really know how to be friends. They don't understand positive incentives. This will cause them problems with European leaders, most importantly Merkel, who's already pushing back, and most importantly with the people in neighboring countries that they so enjoy pushing around. It is possible to imagine a scenario in Ukraine or Armenia where anti-Russian feelings unite the people and serve as a politically unifying force to a divided opposition. As usual, it largely relates to how many people are out on the streets. I recommend that the next neighborhood summit the EU holds should be in the summer. Justice Minister Ted Tsoulikiani announced the government is delaying the launch of the Miscarriages of Justice Commission for financial reasons. The commission was supposed to be set up to see if it could, if court decisions made during the former government were lawful or not. Tsoulikiani said, quote, although no one is against setting up this commission, if a person is acquitted, it will then allow them to seek compensation through a civil lawsuit. Today, our country is not financially ready for that, end quote. Public defender Ucha Nanuashvili criticized the decision. As a reminder, the draft law, end quote. As a reminder, the draft law would have made a 15-member commission for a 3-year term to deal with so-called miscarriages of justice. Prisoners went on hunger strike to protest Tsoulikiani's decision. According to the deputy prison minister, Giga Giorgadze, 22 inmates are refusing to eat as of the 29th of November. 15 demanded their verdicts be changed. The others simply are protesting Tsoulikiani's decision. This is a really complicated thing because there were a lot of unfair decisions, but it's just a mess to open this up. I don't know. I'm not sure how that's going to end up going. I mean, yes, justice needs to be served, particularly considering the UNM officials that they've got in jail, and they keep saying, well, we can't just let them out. Justice must be served. Well, if justice must be served, there's a heck of a lot more civil cases than criminal cases against formal officials. So I don't know what they're going to do. UNESCO has declared the Georgian method of making wine in Akvevedi an international intangible heritage thing, which is kind of cool. So check that out. I don't know what that's going to mean for Georgia, but it certainly can't hurt Georgian wine, especially not the sort of technical wine, but that wine that is made by that method. Russia today interviewed Prime Minister Irakli Kharibashvili about investigating Misha and other issues. Kharibashvili said that no office or position guarantees immunity from the law. He spoke about the Sochi Olympics, in which Georgians will participate. However, no government delegation will attend. He also discussed the economic downturn that began in 2012 and explains that it is the result of the former government's vast external debt. This last part about the vast external debt is malarkey, by the way. Georgia did not have a vast external debt. It had a pretty good-sized external debt, but compared to a lot of other places, it wasn't really that huge. Prime Minister Khatibashvili set up an economics commission to discuss Georgia's economic challenges. The council included 12 members, including the Minister of Economy, the head of the Partnership Fund, Director General of Georgian Railways, the head of the Co-Investment Fund, and the Business Ombudsman, among others. No further information on this, but an interesting development. Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe imposed a sanction on Georgia after the country refused to let Vasily Likachev, a Russian election observer, enter the presidential contest a month ago. The sanction means Georgia can't host any committee meetings for the next 2 years. However, the council will lift this restriction as soon as Georgia guarantees assembly members freedom of movement. Vasily Likachev, a Russian Duma representative, was warned when he tried to enter Georgia that he risked arrest and a fine if he crossed the border because he has entered Abkhazia from the Russian side. I think that this law is kind of silly, but I also think that the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe is really, really silly, so maybe this whole thing is not such a bad thing. On the 4th of December, the Court of Appeal acquitted former Interior Minister Bacho Akhalaya on charges of illegal deprivation of freedom and inhuman treatment of army personnel. Two other defendants, former Army Sergeant Aliko Gorgadze and former commander of the 4th Infantry Brigade, Zura Shamatava, were found guilty and sentenced to 3 years and 9 months in jail each. Akhalaya was arrested in early November 2012 and initially charged with exceeding official powers, involving an allegation of abuse of soldiers in October 2011 when he was defense minister. He was then charged with illegal deprivation of freedom, involving an allegation of beating a man and then holding him in illegal confinement for several hours in September 2011. Under the torture charges, which were added against Akhalaya in mid-November, he was accused of inhuman treatment of more than a dozen army personnel in February 2010 when he served as defense minister. Just can't make it stick with Bacho. On March 2010, the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, otherwise known as the EBRD, and the European Investment Bank approved a 200 million euro loan for Georgian Railways Tbilisi Bypass Project. So that was 3.5 years ago. The goal was to bypass central Tbilisi and thereby avoid transporting oil through the city. Doing so would allow development in the area along the old train path and central station, whose land values are depressed, allegedly. In November 2011, the Georgian Railway decided to go ahead with construction without EBRD's loan. In August 2013, the government put the construction on hold, a move which Tbilisi Mayor Gigi Ugulava criticized. Here are the concerns about the project. First, the bypass divides the railway passenger system into two parts, a west and an eastern portion, so there would be no direct eastern-western link. This will lead to lower railway traffic and a subsequent increase in car usage. Another concern is the plan includes building a rail through the densely populated Avchala district. The high train embankment does not have sufficient safeguards to prevent against spilling oil and possible accidents in the area. A third concern is drinking water pollution. Due to the underground streams which run towards the Tbilisi Reservoir, if even half a tank spills, it could spoil 50% of the volume of the reservoir, leaving a quarter of Tbilisi's population without drinking water and around 20,000 hectares of agricultural land in the Gardabani region without irrigation. These are all very important considerations, and it's really great that the government is delaying this project. The biggest problem, though, is that the reason the national movement wanted to do it in the first place, which is pulling up the tracks in the middle of the city and getting rid of the central station, is the problem. The UNM officials wanted the land and the money they would get from developing it. But the real problem is that the world is moving to rail traffic, and every country and city in the world that pulled up tracks in the 50s and 60s and 70s, deeply regrets it. This is a giant issue for Tbilisi. So anybody with any interest or information about this, please let us know. Following up on the draft law about local governance, on the 4th of December, Ilya II said that the church will do everything in its power to undermine this law. They firmly do not support, the church firmly does not support it because it will, quote, disintegrate Georgia, end quote. He said, quote, in our opinion, each district should be directly related to our government. The government should be aware of the problems that exist in the region. Some try to adopt the law immediately. In our opinion, this should be discussed by the entire nation, end quote. As a reminder, the Regional Development Ministry proposed this law to the parliament, Narmania, who's now being proposed for mayor. If passed, it will introduce direct mayoral elections in 17 towns, as well as direct elections for heads of all municipalities next year. This is important, so I will tell you the plan for the setup. Remember, local elections will be held in late spring. Now there are, currently, there are five self-governing cities, Tbilisi, Kutaisi, Batumi, Rustavi, and Poti. Mayors of these cities, except Tbilisi, are elected by their respective local councils, or sacrobulos. Currently, Tbilisi is the only city in Georgia where the mayor is directly elected by voters, despite what Misha told right after when he addressed the UN General Assembly right after the war. So towns of at least 15,000 residents automatically become eligible for the status of self-governing city, according to the draft. Voters in each of these towns will be able to directly elect mayors. That means that apart from the five cities, which are already self-governing cities, the statutes under the proposed bill will also be granted to at least three more towns: Zugdidi, Gori, Samtredia, Khashuri, Sanaki, Zestaponi, Telavi, Marnauli, Ozurgeti, Kobuleti, Akhaltsikhe, Skaltubo, and Kaspi. But the bill also makes it possible to grant this statute to those towns which fall short of 15,000 in number of residents but have a potential of urban attractiveness. It will be up to the parliament to decide whether to grant this status or not to towns with less than 15,000 residents. Among the towns which have less than 15,000 residents but can potentially become eligible for this status are Tribuli, Borjomi, Chiatura, Sagareggio, Gardabani, Khoni, and Gurjani. This is really important, and particularly the fact that the church is commenting on this. I mean, what does this mean? Does this mean that the parliament needs to vet things with the church? It would be very interesting to see which members of parliament use the church as a justification for being against this law. I mean, Georgia really needs some sort of formal system of elected government at the local level that works, which it has never had, neither under Shevardnadze nor under Saakashvili when it was a very centralized system. It's not clear why the church is interested in this, but it's clearly a barrier to Georgia's democratic development. And we all know who doesn't want Georgia's democratic development, so who knows, maybe some conversations have been held. It's fairly unusual for the Patriarch to speak so decisively against a particular draft law. According to the finance minister, Nodar Khaduri, the president's salary will increase to 7,200 lari per month, which is about $4,000 a month. Misha's salary was 4,500 lari. Khaduri justifies the increase, saying that Misha had access to other funds, which Mark Vilashvili won't be able to use. Khaduri added that the staff cuts will fund the increase. Personally, I think this is pretty reasonable, since in many ways the previous government treated state funds as a cash box. On the 4th of December, a small group of Georgian Christians, led by former political prisoner, I'm saying that with air quotes, Levon Chachua, protested Mark Velashvili's ceremonial lighting of a Hanukkah menorah on Freedom Square. The protesters called out, "No, don't light it. It's a lie." These people are crazy and annoying, and I guess that has to happen, but there has not been the smackdown from the government about them that would be nice. And I'm not saying put them in jail. I'm just saying, you know, to clarify the matters with them. Georgian Dream Member of Parliament Dato Saganalidze said that he will leave politics and return to the business sector for personal reasons at the end of the fall. Georgian Dream's party council made Gia Volsky political secretary. Volsky is the chair of the Committee on Procedural Issues. Head of the National Security Council, Irina Imeda-Lashvili, will be Secretary for Legal Affairs, and Armaz Akhlediani will be Secretary for International Affairs. Akhlediani was the Executive Secretary of Georgian Dream. Irakli Gvilava will head the youth wing. We don't really know anything about Gvilava, so if anybody knows him, let us know. UNM Member of Parliament Georgi Vashadze is considering running for mayor of Tbilisi in UNM's primary election. The primary dates have not been announced yet. The mayoral election will be in 2014. Beginning on the 1st of January, the Reintegration Ministry will be known as the Ministry of Reconciliation and Civil Equality. Minister Pata Zakharashvili said that now the name is more neutral and will enable Georgian authorities to negotiate with the Abkhaz and South Ossetians. Zakharashvili added that he had requested the name change for more than a year, but Misha refused to sign the document. This is a great move. On the 29th of November, Finance Minister Khaduri stated that Georgia's budget for next year will be about 9 billion lari. The draft budget is based on a predictive 5% growth in GDP, optimistic, and 3.5% deflation. Deflation with a D as in Delta. Khaduri commented that this 5% growth was reduced from the earlier expectation of 7% growth that was not going to happen. 3.5% deflation seems a little nutty to me. Optimistic in some ways for budget makers and consumers, but not so great for the economy. Georgia's ranking on TI's Corruption Perception Index fell from 51st to 55th place out of 177 countries. Regionally, Turkey was the best, ranking 53rd place. Armenia is in 94th place, while Russia and Azerbaijan share 127th place. Transparency International recommends Georgia strengthen the prosecutor's office, the state audit office, and the competition agency, and independent regulatory bodies. Justice Ministry is desperately trying to get the prosecutors to act like prosecutors, which they didn't do under Shevardnadze or Misha, but it's a long road. They don't know how to investigate or argue cases. They only know how to tell judges what to do. And the Justice Ministry doesn't really have much authority to do that anymore, so it's a bit of a mess. The state audit agency and competition entity, as well as all other state regulatory entities, are pretty problematic. According to the news agency frontnews.ge, Ilya II invited Russian Orthodox Patriarch Kirill to Georgia in December, while the exact date isn't yet known. Kirill is expected to meet with church and government representatives. And for those who didn't see it, by the way, a book has come out in the Georgian language about how great Vladimir Putin is. There were comments in the press about it by Petre Mamradze, Shevardnadze's chief of staff, and Nana Devdadiani, who used to be the head of the Central Elections Commission that threw the elections for Shevardnadze in 2003 that led to the Rose Revolution. Any Georgian listeners who get their hands on the book, we would love to have a running commentary and send us some quotes. Following up on the story about the minaret in Chela, according to local newspaper, on the 27th of November, the local government in Adigeni issued an order to restore the minaret. It was re-erected during the night. Priests from nearby villages came to protest. The Union of Orthodox Parents, a radical religious group mostly known for protesting events against LGBT rights, came to Chela from Tbilisi to join the protest. The rally ended peacefully, but protesters planned to organize a national referendum to decide whether it was right to restore the minaret in Chela. As a reminder, yeah, great. I mean, because that's exactly what referendums should be used for. As a reminder, the minaret in Chela was first installed in August. By the end of the month, it was dismantled after the Revenue Service claimed that they had not properly declared the building's materials when they imported it. This is all great news, but let's keep following to see what happens about the referendum especially. If you're interested in being on the board of the Georgian Public Broadcaster, since it's all gone so well for all of that crew, today is your day. There's a competition to select members for the new 9-seat board. Chairman of the Parliament, Datu Subhashvili, is creating a 9-member commission which will be in charge of selecting candidates for the new 9-person board. The commission has to select 3 candidates. Lawmakers outside the parliamentary majority group will also name 3 candidates. 2 candidates will be named by the public defender, and 1 candidate will be named by the Ajada legislative body. Nominated candidates will then require the parliament's approval. If you're interested in applying, send a letter to Usupashvili at the parliament in Kutaisi. The address is 26 Abashidze Street in Kutaisi. On the 3rd of December, strong winds across the country left 70,000 households without power. The wind caused a truck accident which blocked the Rikoti Pass, and Batumi water damaged the seashore. One flight from Batumi to Istanbul was canceled. In Tbilisi, strong winds damaged the roof of the public service hall, or as it's known about town, the Mushroom Patch. For those who don't know, it was built very, very quickly before the elections a year ago and is not so sturdy. The stairs on the bridge leading there over the Sanapito are the stupidest stairs in the global history of construction. Anyway, interior and exterior portions of the roof of the Mushroom Patch collapsed. The building was evacuated and nobody was injured. According to the TI Georgia, construction on the building began in March 2012 and ended 6 months later. The Italian company Permastelisa Interiors built the roof of the service hall for 10.3 million euros. Tzulukiani posted on Facebook that representatives of the construction company arrived in Tbilisi on the 4th of December. On the 5th of December, the Ministry of Justice said that the public service hall staff are back at the facility. However, the building is not ready to receive people. If you need to submit a document, you can do so at the National Bureau of Enforcement's Temporary Service Center located at Tamar Mepe and Chumanashvili Street. Final documents can be picked up at the service center in Deda Ena Park. On July 12th, the UK Parliament, the House of Lords, actually, discussed the Georgian Public Service Hall and the government's desire to reform the Public Service Hall. Lords discussed the Georgian example and how it's easier for customers to access service faster in one place. One of the Lords quoted the U.S. Secretary of State Clinton, who said that the Georgian Public Hall is very creative, an impressive advancement, and modern technology wonder. Reminds me of the joke of the hereditary peer in the House of Lords, who was dreaming that he was giving a speech in front of the House of Lords and woke up and he was giving a speech in front of the House of Lords. The Silk Road Group started building a $5 million three-story restaurant entertainment complex in the Rose Revolution Square. It is expected to be completed in the spring of 2015. Natalie Portman, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Al Pacino will star in a movie about the Armenian genocide by the Armenian-American filmmaker Art Sevada. The movie is slated to come out on the 24th of April, 2015, just around the time that the Silk Road Group Rose Revolution Square building will open. In parliamentary news, Georgian Dream's draft amendments to the Liberty Charter passed in the first hearing. If it becomes law, the amendments will give teeth to the 2011 Liberty Charter, which banned public displays of totalitarian and communist regime symbols. One of the bill's initiators, MP Levon Berzanashvili of the Republican Party, says that his bill directly addresses the restoration of Stalin monuments around Georgia. In May 2011, Parliament adopted the charter, which included a provision for the Ministry of Internal Affairs to create a state commission which would gather information about ideologically fascist and communistic symbols, monuments, statues, inscriptions, street and square names. The commission was never established. The proposed amendment sets a two-month time frame for making this commission, whose decisions will be legally binding. Failure to listen to the commission will result in a warning followed by a 1,000 lari fine. The members will include a parliamentary representative. This is a really, really bad law. Co-initiator Georgian Dream MP Tamar Kordzaya replaced the term Soviet symbols used in the existing law with the phrase symbols of the totalitarian communist regime. For those who don't know, all the UNM people said that this law was passed because Gia Tortoladze wanted something like this and he had a faction for a while. The law was very stupidly worded and confused, didn't really make any sense, and everybody said it didn't matter. But as soon as it happened, a few things happened. The star at the top of Dom Kino at Rustaveli Metro, but across from McDonald's, disappeared, and there was a giant fiberglass head of Lenin that had been built for Brezhnev's last visit to Tbilisi in 1980 that was sort of hidden in a vacant lot in Dahomey, and it also disappeared. The meme this week comes from the signing of the DCFTA agreement with the EU. Apparently, Economy Minister Georgi Kvitikashvili and the European Commissioner for Trade, Karel de Gucht, signed the document while musical variations of two songs played in the background, Suliko and Shalacho. Shalacho is a super song, and some people thought that it was inappropriate for the event. European Integration Minister Aliko Petriashvili jokingly commented that it was Misha who chose and left the music before retiring. The video of the singing with the music will be posted on the forum. Things to read, an article by Tom Duvall about Georgia after Misha and BI, as he calls it a country after the Titans. The author describes the current situation in Georgia and mentions the two relatively inexperienced men are occupying the top two offices. He compares the situation of countries like Bulgaria and Romania in the 1990s. The article posted on demurikratia.livejournal.com called Advice to Aspiring Dictators, How to Pretend to Be a True Democrat, end quote, which the author sent to me. He emailed me. The author, pretending to be Misha, advises aspiring autocrats to tell outrageous lies, give in-kind bribes to potential allies abroad in the form of expensive vacations, create a fake opposition party, and be unlike other autocrats, among other tips. It is sarcastic and somewhat droll. BuzzFeed.com's article, The Che Guevara and the Caucasus, which tells the story of Georgia's MP Givi Targamadze. Russia accuses Targamadze of being the Georgian Che Guevara, who, under orders from Misha, planned to perform terrorist attacks. Misha and the senior members in UNM have admitted for the first time that part of the Russian story is true. Targamadze did meet with activists on Misha's orders in Lithuania and Belarus. However, they claim Targamadze's recommendations were not the nefarious things the Russians accuse him of. For instance, Targamadze told activists to smear the Russian security services headquarters with catnip so that Moscow strays would mark it as their territory, a trick he used under Shevardnadze. TI Georgia's new report, Businessmen in Politics and Politicians in Business, which focuses on the revolving door between politics and the private sector and the risk of corruption. A post on ISET's blog by Nino Abashidze and Florian Bierman about the heavy pollution due to car traffic in Tbilisi and the costs Georgians pay for their automobiles. The number of cars in Georgia increased by more than 60% between 2006 and 2012. The author gives some advice as how to improve the situation, including incentivizing people to enter the city with public transport instead of using their private cars and enhancing alternative forms of mobility such as carpool lanes or buses for buses and marshrutkas. They also recommend more green areas in the city. It's really good. It's also nice to have somebody writing about a specific policy that matters for people's lives rather than sort of gigantic national issues like that. But take a look at it. An article by Londa Beria in democracyandfreedomwatch.net about gypsies in Georgia and the problems with their official numbers and registration. The author says that gypsies don't believe that elections will improve their lives. Usually the Roma don't participate in elections because they don't have IDs. The government doesn't have a special program for the Roma, which makes it hard to involve them in the political life of the country. And Putin's power grab, the first Armenia now Ukraine by Will Cathcart and BuzzFeed, that says that Russia is getting more aggressive and details how it's going about doing that in the neighborhood, as well as the pushback. I am quoted. These things to read will be in our forum. This week's geocapital number is 88, which is the percentage of Georgians who think that men should be the breadwinner of the family, according to the recently released UN study on Georgian attitudes towards gender. Study showed, as expected, that traditional views on gender roles dominate. Georgians in general believe a woman's main function is to raise children and take care of the household, while a man's function is to support the family financially. Women should obey their husbands, even when they disagree with them. Let's look at the region. According to USAID's 2010 gender assessment, 60% of Armenians think that men should be the primary breadwinner, a lot lower than Georgia, and have a greater right to jobs than women. According to UNDP data, in Azerbaijan, 36% of women and 43% of men think that there is no need for female employment at all. In Russia, 51% of women and 65% of men agree that it is a husband's responsibility to earn money and a wife's responsibility to take care of the house and children. Only 24% of Russian women and 22% of men disagree with this statement. Interesting that Armenia is so much lower than Georgia. Good job, Armenians. This week's English language movie at the Roosevelt Theater across from Parliament is on Saturday, the 7th of December, Carrie, at 8 p.m. On the 7th of December, the 2013 International Women's Association Georgia Winter Charity Expo will take place from 10 to 6 at the Sheraton Hotel. As in previous years, art will be sold, there'll be a raffle, book stands, and a children's playroom. For additional information, visit iwa.ge. There's certainly a lot of stuff to buy there. If you're in Portland and looking for some great Georgian food, go to Kadgigogo, the Georgian food cart pod. They sell badrijani, lobiani, khingali, khajapuri, and more. Tell your Portland, Oregon friends about it. For info, go to kadgigogo.com or look up Kadgigogo PDX on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. Our email is tabealpod@gmail.com or post to the forum on our website, www.tabealpod.com. I hadn't known that this past July, the great guitar player and songwriter from Oklahoma, J.J. Cale, died. Here he is with a song he wrote, made famous by Eric Clapton from 1971, After Midnight.
After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out. Play one. All right.